is a bit more forgiving.
You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 230 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is David. I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
Jay.
Hello.
And Andy.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back, Jay. I think you've had a week or so, a podcast or two off, haven't you?
I think I missed the last one. It was only one, I think.
We certainly missed you. I think you actually missed one of the funniest podcasts we've ever done, mainly because of Andy's cats. honestly, it was a you had to be there moment. But it's great to have you back, and what a show to come back to, because there's been some big old news this past week, and it would be rude if we weren't to address the situation and talk about it. I am, of course, talking about the recent reveal about Age of Sigmar and the models that are disappearing from the range, in particular, the Stormcast Eternals range. So we're having a bit of a combined top three main segment this week because there's a lot to go through. We've got quite a few comments to read out, in particular from the community as well. And of course, we've all got our own opinions as well that we want to kind of talk about on this week's show. So it's a very Age of Sigmar week this week, but I'm sure we'll chat about other stuff. We've, of course, got all the latest news as well. And of course, all our hobby updates, which we're going to go straight into now. So who do we pick on first? Let's pick on the returning host, Jay. What have you been up to in the hobby recently, Jay?
So I have been painting some Old World, actually. Have been painting some Ironbreakers, Longbeards, and Hammerers, just a couple of models from each unit, just to try and come up with a scheme that I can sort of settle on. So I've been having fun with them. These are the old metal models as well, so the details are really, really sort of characterful on them. But they're not as straightforward to paint, I'm finding, as the more recent sort of plastic sculpts that Games Workshop released. But I'm still enjoying them. They're a nice little challenge, an enjoyable challenge. So that's on the Old World front. On the Horus Heresy side, I never stop painting Horus Heresy, it seems. We've got tickets to the Throne of Skulls doubles in, I think it's July. Did I say July? I hope it's July, so that gives me enough time. and I've decided to start a new old army. So you might remember that Imperial Fists were my first Horus Heresy second edition army. I've decided to build and paint a new Horus Heresy Imperial Fists second edition army using a slightly different sort of technique and colour scheme. So I haven't done too much on them yet. I've been painting up a couple of tactical marines, a couple of dreadnoughts, and a character to lead them so far. So just sort of getting to grips with the yellow scheme. And it's sort of a, in terms of the technique I'm using, it sort of builds on what I did with the Blood Angels. But I'm finding they're taking a lot more time than the Blood Angels took. I don't know if that's just because yellow is a bit more of a difficult color to work with.
Yeah, yellow's a tricky red one, isn't it? I guess the red, I guess you can hide a lot of the imperfections.
It's a bit more forgiving. It's true, yeah. I am finding I'm having to go back and almost like reshade certain elements of the model as I finish layering up the highlights. So, but I mean, I'm enjoying it and I'm quite pleased with the end results. And I think I've got plenty of time. It's only a 1500 point list that I need to build by the summer. So I think I should be okay to get that built and painted by then.
You love Ace Jay. I love the kind of grim, dark scheme you've gone for.
Yeah, well, this is it. So I have enjoyed doing like the sort of grimdark for the Horus Heresy. So with the Blood Angels and the Custodes, and obviously with a bright yellow Imperial Fist army, it's an interesting challenge to try and get them looking suitably sort of weathered and beaten. But I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I really like it. And I've converted up a Camber Diaz model. So Camber Diaz, for those that have read Saturnine and those that haven't, Camber Diaz is a really, really cool Imperial Fist character in that book that rallies a bunch of Imperial Army sort of soldiers from various regiments that have been destroyed and battered and scattered across Terra. and he rallies them in defense of the, I think it's the Pons Solar, a bridge that leads to the fated spaceport.
Mm.
And there's a really, really cool scene with him locking shields with some of his brothers against a onrushing horde of World Eaters. So Cambadeus is a proper Imperial Fist sort of legend. He doesn't have rules. But I sort of, you know, you can get a good description of his war gear. He's armed with a broadsword and a shield. So I've used the fairly recent Horus Heresy Legion champion model. And I've sort of converted him up a little bit. I've given him a head swap and I've swapped his left arm. So I think in the original model, he's holding like a combi melter, but I've used some bits from the, Assault Marines box. And then also a shield from the Phalanx Warder set. So he's holding that instead. But yeah, I really like him. And I think that's me. I don't know. Oh, we had a good game, didn't we, Dave? We put the Tau Codex to the...
we did. Yeah,
against your Orcs. That's the first game of 40K 10th edition that I played in a while. I think the last time I played, actually, must have been at Warhammer World itself. And it was a fun game. We played a scenario out of White Dwarf. It was quite cool. And you can tell we were definitely both out of sort of shape because the mission itself was you deploy your objectives down and then one of them's this big shield generator that you're trying to damage the enemy's shield generator while keep yours alive, and you get extra points if your warlord's next to shield generator something. So we all set up our warlords, chose our shield generators, and then realized, oh, hang on, the shield generators are miles away from everyone's warlords. But it's still a good game.
It's okay when you've got a Farsight as your warlord, though, because he's pretty nippy. An Orc in mega armor has not quite got the same speed.
No, he wasn't. There was a really cool strat, yeah, that I was using for the tower. So Farsight gets to use a stratagem for free each turn, each battle round. And I was using one of the new detachments, the Retaliation Cadre, which is like the Battlesuit Heavy detachment. Now, I only had two units of Battlesuits and Farsight in the army. My army was predominantly Fire Warriors and Breachers, which meant that I had a lot of CP left to use this. I can't remember what the name of the stratagem was now, but it basically lets Farsight move. And a battle suits move again after shooting. Really, really cool. But it made them very, very mobile, didn't it, Dave?
Yeah, it did. That Farsight and that unit did a lot of damage. But it was a great game. It was the first time I've ever used the Orcs. And I really enjoyed it. There was some really awesome units. I think the War Boss in Mega Armor absolutely did loads of work.
Oh, yeah.
His unit of Mega Knobs that were with him really did nothing. And like absolutely nothing. Commandos did cool. My poor death copters charged into fire warriors and I think killed one. So yeah, it was a great game. I think you ran away with it on points. I think you just had so much.
Well, compared yeah, to me. we got a bit like you say, when we sort of deployed wrong, didn't we, really? And yeah. I was able to get my warlord back onto an objective thanks to their sort of battle suit jump packs, whereas like you say, you had no transports or anything, did you? So
no, there wasn't much left at the end, though, Jay.
There wasn't much left on either side at the end, really, was there, I don't think.
No, there wasn't. There was a very sparse battlefield, but it was a great game. And I look forward to maybe taking on the Tau again when I've actually got a proper... It was kind of like everything Orc that I've got built at the moment, so there wasn't really much thought that had gone into the list building, just whatever models I could use, really. So I look forward to having that rematch when I've actually got a proper army together. Maybe when the new book launches, because we know that's up for pre-order next week. Ooh. At the time of recording. You've been quite busy then, Jay, especially the old Heresy, as always.
Oh, I just like painting Heresy. Yeah, I mean, there's been some really, really cool releases recently up for the Heresy, I think. The Solo Auxilia army is really, really nice. But I just like painting Marines. Specifically Horus Heresy Marines. I don't know, it's my jam.
Well, fair enough. Andy, what have you been up to in the hobby?
Well, mine is short and sweet. So I've been building some more Tomb Kings for the Old World. I've got 16 skeleton warriors on my painting desk as we speak. But unfortunately, it's just their legs at the minute. The rest of them haven't quite been built yet. I've got a Necro Sphinx and a War Sphinx built. I haven't quite decided how I'm going to paint my Tomb Kings yet, so I'm holding off on priming them. I also bought some Middle Earth scenery. I bought some of the Gondor ruins for one of my hobby goals, which is probably going to get done towards the end of the year, but it's to recreate a battle report from one of the really, really old White Dwarfs, which is currently in the Warhammer Vault. And it came out when the Return of the King film came out. So that's what, 2003-ish? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want to recreate that. And of course, you know, fighting in Minas Tirith, you kind of need some Gondor scenery. So I bought two of the Gondor mansions and the Watchtower. And the Watchtower is currently sat in my display cabinet. And you know what? For Middle-earth being quite small, it's ginormous.
It's a huge scenery kit, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it went together pretty well. But yeah, the scenery itself is humongous. And then speaking of humongous, I also built the mountain, I'm going to get this wrong, Mountain Jotnar for Nords for Conquest, the Last Argument of Kings.
He's a big boy as well, isn't he?
He's quite a big boy, yeah. So I've got him built, and I think that's about it for me. Oh, I had a game of Warcry. I used my Gorge and Moor pack versus some silly Sylvaneth. and that was good fun. I won that one, so that's always good. I think that's about it, really. I can't think of anything else that I've been building and painting, to be honest with you.
Excellent. The Gondor scenery is a bit of a surprise, but yeah, it's a really nice set of kit buildings they are. And they've done some quite nice scenery for Lord of the Rings, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, even the Rohan house.
Yeah, those Rohan buildings are excellent. Even with like the walls as well, they're all really cool. Excellent. I've also been doing quite a bit of hobby. Obviously, we've heard that there are some rats on the way. So I felt like I needed to just reinforce my already quite large Skaven army with some missing units. So I've built so far my endless spells. I have started painting a Doom Wheel. And I'm also probably about 70% through painting Bone Ripper, a.k.a. Thankful and Bone Ripper. So I'm hoping to get him done in the next two nights, and I can get Thankful, shouldn't take long at all, maybe a night or two. And then I'll get him based like the rest of my models. Can't wait to use him. I've been waiting for ages, and it didn't seem right that we're going into a new era of Age of Sigmar with the Skaven at the forefront and for him not to be in my army. So I tell you what, though, that kit came in lots of parts. I mean, it took me a couple of nights, I think, to build them all. Like, to build Bone Ripper and Thankful. Like, I don't know if like kits nowadays just have less parts, or I'm just out of practice. But there was an awful lot of parts in that model. But really happy. He's a really cool model. He really sort of stands over the other clan rats and stuff. So that's very cool. I want to get those done very quickly. I've also been building some of the Age of Sigmar scenery that I've got. So I'd like to get some of that built and painted ready for the new edition. At the moment, I've been working on stuff that I've got with Stormbringer. So I've got a couple of buildings, fountains. I can't think of what the name of the big balloon looking thing's called, whatever it is. But I have also got some Gnarlwood scenery that I want to build as well. In fact, what I've been thinking is I've got some, I've had them for years, some of those vines that you can buy, you know, the official Warhammer ones.
Oh, yeah.
Using those over some of the scenery I've got to kind of bring them into the Gnarlwood theme.
Oh, and then yeah. Use them as
one
maybe
set.
Maybe a City of Sigmar that's out in Gur on the edge of the Gnarlwood, or, you know,
that's being reclaimed.
Maybe, yeah.
Being reclaimed by nature. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So yeah, I've been building some of those. And the only other thing I've been doing, keeping it Age of Sigmar, is I purchased the new Knight Arcanum model that was on Warhammer.com. Is it Morden Zane?
The Celebration one.
Yeah, the Celebration one. I've bought him, built him, sprayed him, and he's going to be the start of my Dawnbringer Crusade Stormcast army for our local Warhammer stores. Dawnbringer Crusade. So if you've not heard about this, all official Warhammer stores have been allocated cities to build or, you know, destroy, depending on their customers. They all got given names. I think our local one's called Saltzenkliff. something like that. And it's really cool because you can have games in the store, like 500 point games, very small kind of games. And you can also play at home as well and like submit results, which is very, very cool. So 500 points is like what? Two units of Stormcast and a hero. So that's my goal to begin with, so I can have some games in our local store. And I'm probably going to paint them on they're going to be Hallowed Knights, but perhaps with purple.
Are they the black armor instead. Or silver armor?
They're a silver armor, yeah. They'll probably have like purple cloaks or something instead of I think they're normally blue. So yeah, looking forward to painting that. It's kind of a bit of a slow.
I just know that if anyone wants to start a Stormcast army or a City Sigma army, choose a different city than Dave, because Dave tends to choose the factions that end up getting.
Yeah, that's a few editions on the run, isn't it, where Dave's faction's been wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I just bought a load of Hallowed Knights transfers. I might sell them now. I've got a bad feeling about the Hallowed Knights.
The other thing kind of Warhammer I can mention is I've got a tournament coming up this Saturday, which I don't think any of you gents unfortunately can attend. But our local gaming group, the Purple Sparkly Unicorns, are having a one-day 40k tournament, 1,000 points. I'm taking along the Guard, a tank company. I don't know how well they're gonna do, but I'm looking forward to trying it out, and I think I'm gonna try fixed missions as well for the first time rather than tactical, because I've only got seven tanks, something like that. So yeah, looking forward to
good luck, Dave.
Thank you. I'll keep you all posted on how I get on. That just leaves you, Matt. What have you been up to in the hobby?
I've been up to a lot. My fingers are bleeding with all the painting that's been done over the last few weeks. Where to start? Well, first of all, gnomes are cool, aren't they? So GW sent us the new gnome releases, and they are just amazing. I mean, no one was expecting the gnomes, really. It's coming gnome. I think I put the opening line in the review, and they are so much fun to paint up. I've actually got the way Blood Bowl kits work, you get two duplicate sprues, which means if you buy the gnome box, you end up with a spare badger and a spare goose. But you're going to get used somewhere. I don't know where, but they will be used.
Could I use them in my Horus Heresy army? Maybe not.
You mock. I saw Goonhammer added some like servo scores and stuff to them to use them as like
Cyber Goose.
Yeah, Cyber Goose, Cyber Badger. So I'm thinking maybe Old World unit fillers for Empire or something, maybe. But yeah, they're going to get used somewhere. So they're really fun. Also painted up some Night Lords. They're cool. I really, really hope that the upgrade sprue from the kill team gets released separately, because if it did, I would do a four Night Lords army. They're so cool. I suspect that's going to be exclusive to that kill team box, which meant if you wanted to do, you know, a full army of them, it's going to be quite expensive to do it.
What makes you think that?
Because it's a kill team upgrade sprue rather than a unit upgrade sprue. So it's got all the kill team specific parts.
Okay.
They've never released any of the kill team specific sprues separately before. It's not like the Dark Angels, which is a sprue of shoulder pads and helmets.
They have released some kill team boxes, like the Phobos unit you can buy in the kill team branding with all the upgrades.
Oh, that's what I mean. But you want to do upgrade an army, I'd have to buy a entire kit in order to get 10 helmets.
Right, understood. Okay,
so yeah. As an upgrade frame, it'd be a lot cheaper to do, but we'll see. They're very cool to do, and also in that box with the mandrakes, which I've painted up, they are amazing too. I haven't got a Drakari army, but if I could do an army of mandrakes, that'd be cool. Weird shadow creatures, and the scenery piece is really nice out as well. I don't think any of you guys have seen it in the flesh. It's big enough to obscure vision. Massive old thing with a big pathway going through it with a few bottlenecks. So that's a really, really nice kit. I've also got the majority of a Dark Oath army on my desk as well. So obviously we know we've got the Dark Oath army set coming very soon. So I thought, you know what, I'll get all my existing Dark Oath stuff painted up, because I've always liked that side of the, you know, Slaves of Darkness. And until this, you know, new box comes out, it's never really been feasible to do an entire army of them. So. Yeah, all of the rampaging marauders. A very Wildlings vibe, Jay. You know, I don't know if that's something that'd appeal to you at some point, maybe.
Oh, well, I like the Dark Oath. I have got the old Darko themed Warcry warband from when it first came out. And I think I do quite like it because it's not overtly chaos. I think you can get away from making like quite a feral, almost like a
Conan.
It reminds me of not Kislev, but like the northerners from the northern waste in the old world that aren't overtly chaos worshipping. They're just worshipping chaos by accident. They're just living in a harsh climate. You know, they're a bit more brutal than, like Conan. So I do like them. But looking forward to seeing what you do with them. Because I think, when was it LVO, wasn't it, when we saw them revealed for the first time? And it was the new sort of replacement Marauder cavalry. And there were lots of sort of female and male sort of... models through the different units, weren't there? Was there a centerpiece, or was that just a chaos?
They've got a creature which it's like a reimagined chaos spawn. It looks like it bursts out of heroes and stuff. So
now that one is interesting to see. Chaos.
That is very overtly chaos. But the normal guys, they're fine. You know, they're just having a whale of a time, aren't they? So yes, really looking forward to doing them. I'm also building up some Solar Exilia because the Solar Exilia will be fighting maybe roused by Camber Diaz. The most difficult thing is picking a colour scheme. I originally was going to do my Solar Orcs army in Chthonian Headhunter's colours, but I've at this point probably got 7,000 or 8,000 points of Sons of Horus, so I don't really need any more traitors. So I thought I'd do a loyalist force. So I've kind of narrowed it down to a handful. I really like the green scheme that they've gone for, like the kind of poster scheme for them. But I saw a really nice one, a kind of more steampunky scheme with lots of golds and brasses and stuff. I think that looked quite nice as well.
That could complement the sort of blacks, yellows, because I've got like I'm not using the gold. I'm using a more brassy sort of in place of where I traditionally use gold as well. So it's a very muted sort of palette that I'm using on my Imperial Fist. So that might look quite nice alongside them. You've got to get some sort of Imperial Fist, 7th Legion iconography across them somehow, like a banner.
I'm thinking maybe if we're doing like brassy colours, then maybe some yellow flashes on banners and kind of striping on tanks. And
Be careful with the striping. I don't want any yellow and black striping. That's that's not an Imperial Fist thing. That's those naughty Iron Warriors.
It is. But so that's the idea with them. I need to come up with what I'm going to do. I think I'll probably lean more into artillery and tanks because that's something you're lacking, isn't it?
It is. I haven't got a single las cannon in my 1,500 point list.
But if there's one thing the Solar Exilia can bring, it's lots of las cannons. Yes, they're on a really fragile platform, but I guess the tactic is shoot first, isn't it? So it's been a pretty good hobby week, Dave.
Excellent. Sounds like we've all been quite busy. Now, there is plenty to get through, including that big chat about Age of Sigmar. So we're going to take a quick pause and come back with all this week's news. So what do we have in this week's news, Matt?
Well, it's an interesting one. I've got two non-Age of Sigmar pieces of news and then a whole lot of Age of Sigmar news. So we'll start with the Horus Heresy bits that I've got. There's a new Legion Command Squad come in. We saw this teased at the New Year reveals and they finally showed it off. And it is quite interesting in that it's a universal kit that works with both the Mark III and the Mark VI Tactical Marine Squads for Horus Heresy, even down to it having different like banners and stuff for each suit of armor and different helmets suiting each of them. This looks really nice. I kind of was expecting a brand new like bespoke kit rather than an upgrade frame, but the way they've put together these Heresy kits, this does kind of make sense doing it this way. I know you guys haven't done too much on Horus Heresy, but would this be something you want to add to your collection?
1,000,000%. I only mentioned maybe a little bit longer than a few weeks ago that when I do really start concentrating on my Legion, I wanted a large banner because I really like the transfers on the transfer sheet, like the of the banners. So I was going to pick up the resin one. But I really like this upgrade sprue. And I really like the fact that you can buy the upgrade sprue on its own or you can get an all-in command box.
Yeah, it's a really nice way of doing it because a lot of people might have spare sprues from the Age of Darkness box, buy this and boom, you've got your command squad. Banners are really good in Heresy as well because they're lined, so you're a scoring unit. And just for conversions and stuff, there's some really nice pieces in here. I'm going to be getting one of these, I think, to add to my many, many legions. I am interested in how well it fits onto like the jet bikes as well, because you can take command squads on jet bikes. And obviously, this doesn't have the bodies and stuff. It's just the arms and the banners and the heads. I've got a feeling it will probably fit. So, yeah, super exciting. In other Heresy news as well, Little Horus Aximand has got a new model on the way. So, obviously, we've had, you know, I think it's safe to say that the Sons of Horus have been the poster boys for the new edition of Horus Heresy, which is good because I play Sons of Horus. And this is a gorgeous model. So I say gorgeous. He's, if you've seen the model, he's a bit of a looker, isn't he? Little Horus. but if you don't like his face, he also has a helmeted head as well. I just think he looks cool with his shield and his sword. Yeah, really, really looking forward to adding this to my army.
Yeah, really nice model. Very, very nice model.
Now, guys, who's excited about Age of Sigmar 4th edition?
Me.
There's been a lot of cool stuff. And obviously, we're in that kind of, I don't know, couple of month period running up to release of the game and Age of Sigmar. And Warhammer Community Daily have been dropping new information about Age of Sigmar. And I don't know about you, but I've been eagerly like refreshing the GW website until the next little snippet of Age of Sigmar information. And I think it's safe to say a lot of information has dropped since last episode where we knew just the vague details. So there's a couple of things that we've, you know, chatted about in the past. All the war scrolls are changing. They've rebalanced kind of like how many wounds should this model have based on how big it looks. Everything fights in melee with 3 inches. Objectives are now contested within 3 inches of a 40 mil objective marker. I've got high hopes. And what they have mentioned is all the battle tomes are gone for third edition. And on day one, there'll be a fully downloadable pack with the quote marks full rules for the army. Now, obviously, based on 40k, we got a single detachment and all the profiles. And they got kind of superseded when the codex came out. I don't know. Age of Sigmar, there is a lot of free rules content on the internet, isn't there? You know, all the profiles were free. So could we see the full kind of like gaming contents within these packs? And then the battle tomes maybe just add some narrative stuff and lore. It'll be interesting to see how they do it this time. But yeah, every army will get a faction pack. And I think it also mentioned that there'll be purchasable card packs as well, like they did with 40k. So that's interesting. Now, one of the things that they chatted about in the initial videos was that the rules for Age of Sigmar are modular. And in that, it basically means that they've put it into like bite-sized chunks. I think I'd argue they've always been modular because, like, you know, there's magic rules and there's terrain rules. But the way they've done it now means that based on the battle pack, you can include some, all, or none of those bits. Which is quite cool. So you've got the core rules, which is, you know, how to move, fight, shoot, you know, coherency, objectives, all that stuff. And then they've got 6 kind of modules: commands, terrain, magic, army composition, command models, and battle tactics. They give an example that in Path to Glory, you might use, you know, all of those apart from battle tactics. You know, we've never used battle tactics in Path to Glory before. It's always been kind of like kind of narrative scenarios, but it's very much a full fat kind of Age of Sigmar with all the other special rules in there. But maybe what they'll do is put out a general's handbook where they have an additional module with the, like, the wild magic dice in the most recent edition of the general's handbook. It makes it a lot more kind of plug and play. On the other end of the scale, you've got a spearhead which doesn't have any of those modules and it's just the core rules. I'm quite excited to see how this goes. I think that's quite a slick way of doing it. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, isn't it? We've kind of always done it like that, because like the Path to Glory stuff was color-coded green, the match play stuff was purple, and the core rules were red and stuff. But I think breaking it down into smaller modules where you've got scenery, you've got, you know, magic and all that sort of stuff, it really allows you to, especially for like a newer player or narrative player, or, you know, or it allows you to tailor the game to how you want to play, because you might look at, you know, terrain rules and think, oh, well, they're just getting in the way. You know, I don't really like them. Or, you know, way back in the day, the deadly rule, you know, if you rolled a one and you're deadly, they died. You know, all of a sudden you can turn around and be like, okay, well, I don't like that part of the game, so I'm just going to take that out. So I think it's nice to structure it.
You've run a lot of events, and very often, the unicorn events, I think the terrain rules often are very bespoke to that. It'd be quite nice that you guys can essentially create your own little rules pack for based on the terrain that you guys have got.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we, like, with the event pack and stuff like that, we can literally just be like, these are the modules that we're using. I think one of the Age of Sigma ones we did maybe a year or so ago, we didn't allow the Fondia pack, which brought in the Incarnate, the Cronspan Incarnate, those sort of stuff. So yeah, I think it's good. They've kind of already done it, but I think it's good to make it a bit broader and a bit more obvious as to you know what the modules are and stuff like that. So I think it's good overall.
One of the things that I think I was a little bit worried about with the new Disney Age of Sigmar is that they'd get rid of the priority role. I think some people hate it, some people love it. I think it is very Age of Sigmar and adds to a lot of the excitement of the game. But I think sometimes being able to take the double turn has been very, very powerful. One of the things I've announced this week on Warcom is that there's an extra little twist in that. So just like the current edition, the player who finishes setting up their army first gets to pick the turn order. And then every other battle round, you roll off. The highest value goes first. If it's a draw, the player who went first in the previous battle round chooses the turn order. So basically, if you roll a double, you've got a bit of insurance against a double turn. So far, so the same as the previous edition. The real twist is, though, if you choose to take the double turn, you can no longer pick a battle tactic in that turn. That is a big, big change. Andy, what do you think of that?
When I saw that, I mean, it's definitely an incentive not to take the double turn. But whether or not it's a good enough incentive, that we will only be able to tell once we've played a couple of games. Because you might think early on, well, if I can kill three of my opponent's units by taking the double turn, then yeah, okay, I lose, let's say, 2 points for a battle tactic in turn two. But if I can decimate my opponent's army, it really doesn't matter early on. You know, I can pick up those points later on in the game. And, you know, at the minute, you look at some battle tactics, and realistically, depending on how you build your army, you might only realistically able to achieve, like, say, 4 out of 8 of the, you know, generic battle tactics. So yeah, you might be like, okay, I can a tactic this turn, it's worth taking a double turn. So I think it's a step in the right direction to not take that double turn for the wrong reasons, you know, to not table your opponent, because ultimately, let's face it, that makes for an unfun game. So I like it. I think it's a step in the right direction. How impactful it will be, that's my big question, and that only time will tell.
I think we really need to see the battle tactics, don't we? And if you're still scoring about the same amount as we were in this edition, because, you know, scoring could be completely different. There could be a lot more points in it than compared to this one. And if that's the case, then yes, you know, giving up a battle tactic could be quite costly. But I absolutely see Andy's point of view. If you can annihilate your opponent's army, they're going to find it very hard to score, and makes it easier for you to score late games. So, you know, maybe we'll see battle tactics worth more in the earlier turns and less in the later turns. I don't think that would happen. That would be a very unusual step, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, we've played a lot of games that have been very close, and I wonder if, you know, say you're neck and neck with your opponent and then the double turn comes up, at that point, it's a big decision, isn't it? You have to make an impact in that double turn, otherwise you might start trailing points.
I think the most surprising thing for me was that Battle Tactics are back full stop. I mean, I don't know if I just got it in my head that we'd have a new kind of objective scoring system. I know.
So Spearhead does. And they mentioned that Spearhead's got a card system for scoring. Yeah. And you know what? That's probably easier for new players too, that you just draw something right if I do that. I was worried that they would go the 40K way and the main game, quote marks, would be a card system. I like Battle Tactics. I think they just needed a bit of refining.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to refer back to that interview video because but even before then, I felt like they were going to take Battle Tactics away and replace it with something else. And then obviously that video came out. I thought, they're going like the Leviathan mission deck. But no, clearly Battle Tactics are here to stay. I just hope that they are. I don't know. They've kind of got harder as the General's Handbooks have gone on.
I'm hoping they take them away from each individual faction, and that, you know, as part of one of those modular battle packs, that the battle tactics are contained within one of those battle packs. I'm hoping that they don't give every single army like four or five unique battle tactics, because some of them, for some armies, were just so, and for other armies, you know, you just didn't even bother looking at your faction ones. And I think if we go, here's 12 generic ones that everyone has access to until the next General's Handbook, those are your 12. I'm happy with that. I think it works.
Yeah, you're right. Some of them are easy. I play against Sylvaneth a lot, and certainly in this season with the Wild Magic Dice and stuff, there's your generic cast a spell without it being unbound. Brilliant. I just be 30 inches away from any hero and cast one, turn one, job done. Yeah. But then the Sylvaneth have also got cast a spell with a Sylvaneth hero, so they can kind of like double dip on the spell casting, where, you know, some armies, Skaven, for example, Dave, you've got to build your army to get those battle tactics, haven't you?
Yeah, they're really not worth it. I mean, I think the only one that potentially is if you go full Clan Pestilence. Can't remember what each one was, but basically there's one generic one for like masters. So I think you have to keep like your Graciers and Thankhorn stuff alive, which is, you know, I think with heroes in Skaven, it's hard to keep them alive because they're not the strongest. And then each of the other battle tactics lean into your different types of Skaven, like Kanskaya and Clan Pestilence, but they're just not very achievable.
Yeah, and on the grand strategies, now obviously we've seen no talk of that, so I assume they're still in, but we'll see. You go from extremes of like, you just get it because for some armies, and others like, if it is exactly 2:15 on the third Friday of the month and there's a full moon and there's a dog barking down the street and you lose no models in your army and you've slayed all of the other armies and each of your models is standing near a tree, then you score your grand strategy. There's a bit of a gulf between them, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll be interested to see more of that. What has also changed as well is how you build your army. So battle line is gone, behemoths are gone, all that stuff is gone completely. And instead, it looks like the game builds more like Middle Earth. So your army has to have a general, and it has to have at least one regiment. You can have up to 5 regiments in your army, and each regiment has a hero, and then 0 to 3 non-hero units. Those units that can be taken are based on the hero. So they gave an example of, let's say we have got a Lumineth army and we've got a Venari banner blade. That banner blade can take any Venari units in their regiment, while a stone mage can take the kind of stone aspect stuff with them. That seems really fitting. So, you know, squigs, for example, a loom boss on a giant squig, you could easily see that having maybe mangler squigs, squig herds, and boingrot bounders maybe as the slots that can go with them. That leads itself to a really natural army. Now, each of those regiments can take as many as they want auxiliary units on top of there. So you could take that Squig army with just that one regiment and then take a load of Trogs and a load of Gits and stuff. The main rub is that each regiment, each, what do they call them? Are they regiments? Yes. Each regiment is a single drop in the game. So for those who haven't played Age of Sigmar, essentially you would deploy that entire regiment in one go. All of your auxiliary units are additional drops. Now, obviously, we've seen the big advantage for going first that you get to pick the first turn, but there's even more of a benefit for going first now in that you get an additional command point every turn if you finish deploying first too, which is a big, big change. I really like the sound of the new army composition. I don't know about you guys, but I think it will naturally lead itself to more thematic armies. If you want to go wild and take everything, you can do, but you're going to be going second most likely. And I do wonder if there'll be a lot of maths hammer on what's the most efficient use of these regiments in order to try and get the first turn.
Yeah,
I think so. It definitely feels like...
Sorry, Andy.
They're definitely pushing that more thematic army building. It's like you, same with the Lumineth, you know, taking the, is it the Alarith temple, the Stone Mage,
yeah,
you know, temples? You know, it's encouraging you to take, you know, that hero who can then take, unlocks those units. I like that because it stops, you know, some
cheesing out the list,
army lists that, yeah, it stops that optimizing list. Like, you know, if you're going to have to take this super powerful unit, then you are going to have to take this hero that might not be very good, and you only have access to, you know, these units. So then, you know, you have to take an auxiliary support unit, and like you said, then that increases your drops. And
I love that.
I think
I
one
love
of the big
that.
Things.
Your cheesy list you could still take validly, but you're going to go second, and you're getting one less command point every turn. And the beardy players who take those kind of lists, they're going to be encouraged, gently encouraged, to take a thematic list that looks nice on the battlefield.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Especially getting rid of battleline units. Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I'm, you know, doing a Dark Oath army, so already it can be, you know, it's going to be multiple regiments of heroes with their little war bands, but I might be able to do a one drop Archeon army with Archeon and a load of Arengard, kind of capturing that kind of stuff. So I think there's going to be lots more lists that we see, which is really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially with taking the Behemoth and artillery, you know, taking those sort of battlefield roles away. Yeah, I think you're going to see some very interesting armies going forwards.
Which is cool. You don't get the same cookie cutter list. I'm already thinking, Dave, what if you took like a warp block engineer and all the doom wheels in the world?
Yeah. There's going to be some really cool lists I want to be able to make this game in.
Yeah, and like you've been restricted with battle line in the past, you know, and some of that they've locked it behind a certain build, haven't they?
Yeah.
But now I guess I suspect there will be sub factions that favour certain units, but I think now you can have more freedom to play the army that you want to and buy the models that you want to.
Yeah, and that's what's the most important. Yeah.
Yeah, they also showed off the new War Scrolls as well, Andy. You mentioned this earlier that you saw the new Nagash one. Do you want to kind of talk us through the new War Scroll and what you think of that?
Yeah, so it looks like they've streamlined the War Scroll a lot more. You know, looking at Nagash's one in particular, you know, you've got abilities that are listed, you know, as passive. You've got abilities that are, you know, once per turn, and importantly, it specifies the turn in which you use those abilities. So, yeah, you know, looking at, you know, Nagash in the hero phase, it says, you know, you can cast Invocation of Nagash in your hero phase, but then its passive ability is add two to the casting rolls, you know. So I think putting, simplifying the War Scroll and making it as easy as possible to play with that model and play with that unit is only going to speed up the game and speed up your enjoyment of those units. I mean, you know, putting keywords at the bottom now. There's like, yeah, again, looking at Nagash, there's War Master, Unique, Hero, Monster, Fly, and then it's got in brackets 9. So we're assuming that he can fly 9 inches. You know, he's got a ward of 5+, which again, I assume is a generic ward save, which, you know, so for Nagash
the
is
bracket,
a 5+.
The brackets on that one, it's Wizard brackets 9, which I think means he can cast 9 spells. How many times have we read through a ward try and see how many casts he's got? Just straight at the bottom now, you can see, yep, he can cast 9, amazing. And he's got a 5+ ward save. I really, really like this.
Yeah, I like it as well. It definitely simplifies things. I mean, the big thing about the war scroll changes is there's no longer a bravery characteristic. It's now been replaced with objective control. You know, we've seen this in 40K, but bringing it into Age of Sigmar. And I like that because previously, you know, the amount of models that you counted as for an objectives was kind of in core rules. You know, monsters counted as 5, things with wounds of 5 or more counted as 2, and you know, all this sort of stuff. So I think putting it all, everything that you need to know about that unit, with the exception of the generic rules, like again, like 5, monster, hero, you know, those sort of things, those generic ones, I think is just going to make the game a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I've introduced a few people to Age of Sigmar like over the last year. And what the two things that always kind of bugs people, Battleshock is a bit of mental gymnastics sometimes, trying to work out what's going on. I'm very glad that's gone. I do hope there's some kind of like, you know, overwhelming loss mechanic that if one side gets battered, it just flees. But they could just do that based on unit strength or something, maybe. I'm not sure. The other one was, like you said, who controls an objective? It's so much easier having them on the war scroll. And it means that they can have some variation between units. There's like, you know, one wound units that are more defensive. I think they mention on the Liberator profile that they were worth more when they're in friendly territory. They can do some stuff that's really fitting to the role they should do. Like maybe the stuff that's like scouts and stuff, maybe they're worth more when they're in enemy territory. So
Battleshock for me was one of those that either did too much and you lost too much of your unit, or it just never really played a part in the game. And for me, as a Sons of Bearmap player, I can tell you for a fact that when the third edition Battle Tome came out, I hated the fact that the amount of models that they counted as was locked behind the Sons of Bearmap Battle Tome. You know, I wanted to be able to take a Mega Gargan in my Ogre list and it count as 20 models on an objective, because then there's a reason for me to take a Mega Gargan. So I'm kind of hoping that all that sort of stuff is locked onto the war scroll and it doesn't matter what army you put it in.
That's great.
So I'm very excited as a giant player.
Yeah, I think these are really good changes. Some people complain that it's a bit dumbed down. I'd argue not. I mean, I think they've consolidated some attack profiles. You know, if we mentioned that range is gone for melee weapons, it's now 3 inches. That makes the game so much quicker. I'm interested to see what the distinction between like spears and swords will be, unless they just consolidate all those various weapons into one profile, which again isn't necessarily a bad thing. They mentioned that ranged attacks as well are still in the game, but they're much shorter than they used to be too.
So yeah,
that's good.
It's very good. Yeah, I think shooting has been a bit of a problem in Age of Sigmar, and toning that down is great. The only thing I'm a bit, I don't know about, is that the keywords on abilities. So you've got like weapons that are crit bracket mortal, so on a hit of a 6, they do mortal wounds. A lot of stuff did that, but was worded in its own way. I guess that consolidates it across the entire range then, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was the big thing. You'd have effectively the same ability on 10 war scrolls and it was all called the same thing. And I think that led to situations in games where you weren't aware of what your opponent's unit could do. And, you know, if you knew that they could get +1 armor save when they get charged or whatever, maybe you don't charge them. So I think having that sort of generic ruling for abilities and stuff, you know, you could turn around and be like, okay, my liberators, they have crit mortals on fire, or, you know, whatever. And every single Age of Sigmar player can be like, oh, okay, I know what that rule is. I know what that means. So I think it's good for the overall game.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting ones as well, like wounds is now health, because a new player would say something with 18 wounds, oh, that must be quite injured then. Where a unit with 18 health, okay, that makes more sense. It's a bit more durable. Yeah. Little tweaks, but makes it a bit more... We know what wounds are because we've been playing the game for ages, but I remember when I first started playing, I was like, oh, is that, you know, is that how many wounds they start with? Is that how many wounds they've suffered? It isn't super clear what that value is, so... Yeah, little stuff. I'm really excited to see more of them. Obviously, we've only seen like two War Scrolls, haven't we? It'd be interesting to see kind of as that goes forward. Now, that's kind of all we've seen rules-wise, but we've also seen a couple of models as well. The Liberators are back in their new armor, and they look ace. I mean, I really like Thunderstrike armor anyway. The old Liberators, I don't know. I was never a fan. I much rather the new Vindicators from last edition. So now being able to have essentially those that same armor, but with the classic sword, you know, hammer and board, it just looks cool. I don't know what you guys think, but I'd much rather paint a unit of these than the old classic chunky boys.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, same. I mean, I played that Realms of Ruin Age of Sigmar game, and in that game, it gave you the option to have your Liberators as the classic ones or new Thunderstrike ones. And yeah, I mean, the new ones, they're more dynamically posed. This is a small little thing, but I prefer the new shoulder pads. I think they look a lot nicer. And let's face it, while Stormcast are... I don't want to say superhuman because they're not really portrayed as being like superhuman. They're not like space marines. They are space marines, but they're not space marines. But these new Liberators, they look humanoid, whereas the previous ones, they all look like Terminators. Like they could take on an army by themselves. These ones look strong, but they don't look invincible.
Back when AOS 1 came out, there was the joke of Sigmarines, wasn't there? I don't think new ones have that problem. Like you say, it looks like there's a person in a suit of armor. It's not a robot. It's not a space marine. It is someone in a sleek suit of armor, and that looks cool.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree.
On the other side of the launch box, though, Dave, we've seen our first clan rats, and I don't think they're a massive departure from the old ones. I mean, you painted more clan rats than me. Do you want to take this section?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think I was a little bit worried that they would go in a more radical direction with the new clan rats, and that they wouldn't work very well standing side by side with my original clan rats, of which I painted far too many. What they've actually done is they've stayed quite true to the original clan rat style. Yes, they are absolutely updated. There's more detail on there, which is both awesome and kind of a little bit daunting. But they look a lot more dynamic, and they look a lot more in keeping with Age of Sigmar. I think they give off a more sort of rabble of rats kind of look, whereas the original clan rats, apart from the front rank, they all just look very regimented, which is absolutely not what the Skaven's about. But equally, they look like they're going to be fine. Excuse me, stood side by side with the original clan rats, which makes me very happy.
I mean, these are probably going to be push fit as well, so they're probably going to be very few parts too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, very happy that it's not a massive departure, but it's a big enough upgrade to feel like, you know, I want to paint a new unit of clan rats because they just look so cool.
We got the standard bearer. He's cool.
Yeah, he's very cool. I like the leader with the almost storm vermin type helmet.
And again, that's really nice. Like vision, they're really good with this in Warcry and Underworlds. Visually, be able to scope those models at a distance. Where some of the older infantry kits, it's hard to differentiate, like your musician, your champion, and your banner bearer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And the final bit of news that I've had this week is one that's caused a bit of drama online and really pretty much fueled our main segment coming up. And that is there's quite a lot of kits that are leaving the Age of Sigmar range. Now, you know, it's not unheard of. We see this, you know, relatively often, but I think this is the first time we've seen it to this scale, certainly for Age of Sigmar. So, I mean, where to start on this? Let's maybe go through the kits that are disappearing. So the Stormcast Eternals are losing a whole host of kits. And there's about 23 kits in total that are disappearing. And, you know, yes, we've got stuff in there like the Liberators and the Prosecutors and the Paladins. They're all quite old kits, aren't they? They came out at the birth of Age of Sigmar, and they probably... I mean, they are, aren't they? All going to get replaced with new kits in 4th edition. But there's some interesting stuff on here. Pretty much the entire range of stuff that came in the 2nd edition box versus the Nighthaunt. So all your Sequiturs, your Evocators, your Ballistas, all the Evocators on Dracolines, Avantis Firestrike. There's lots and lots of stuff here that's disappearing for the Stormcast, which is unheard of, really. I mean, for Space Marines, yeah, we've seen old stuff kind of disappear and be replaced with, you know, the Primaris kits.
I think with the Space Marines as well, though, is you have seen that, but it was much more gradual, and you found that replacement models were phased in before the other models were removed, if that makes sense. You know, we had Primaris and Trueborn alongside each other for an edition or two before finally we're starting to see some of the Firstborn get removed. But that's certainly not the case with units like Evocators and Sequiturs and things like that, and the Ballista.
Yeah, I mean, I think they came out about 6 years ago, two editions ago now. So, yeah, I know some of these are your favourite kits as well, aren't they, Dave, for the Stormcast?
The Sacrosanct Chamber.
Yeah, it was particularly painful for me because, I really like that chapter. I love all like the robes and the magic that they had. It was really shocking. It's weird in that, like, you look at this list and there are no Vanguard Hunters on here, and they were the edition before the Sacrosanct Chamber. So they've all survived. I don't know. What really gets me about this is you wouldn't see this in 40K. You would not see a mass exodus like this. And I don't know if that shows a difference in number of players, you know, between Age of Sigmar and 40K. Like, they could have done this with the Firstborn. And I bet there was somebody... or a group of people at head office that wanted to do this with the Firstborn, but they were worried about the consequences online. But here they don't seem to have had that same concern.
I don't know. So obviously we talk about this more in the next section, but I suspect sales figures counts massively towards this. And I suspect Firstborn Marines still sell pretty well, where maybe, you know, these kits for Age of Sigmar didn't. So, I mean, we'll jump on that properly in the next section. Skaven are getting a load of kits disappearing too. This one seems more, I guess, obviously the stuff that's going to get replaced in 4th edition. Yeah, we know that they're in the launch box, don't we?
Yeah, this got me quite excited, to be honest, because, you know, they've said that a lot have been replaced, but not everything, but... you look at this and you're like, everything I agreed with what's gone, they're really old models. And it just gets me really excited about what we're going to see when this new box comes. And then over time, obviously, new Skaven kits. So this had the complete opposite effect. This got me very excited for what's on the horizon.
Yeah. Bone Splitters players. Now, you did have some Bone Splitters, Dave, but you were never really a fan of them. And it looks like the entire Bone Splitter range will be removing from the next Uruk War Clans book. Mm. Now, we've talked about this in the past, both privately and on the podcast as well, that a lot of the old world kits that have been temporarily housed in Age of Sigmar, I reckon over the next 2 years, they're all going to go to old world. And there'll be replacements coming out for, you know, Age of Sigmar. You know, there's no dwarves or elves on this list, but it wouldn't surprise me, for example, when the next Age of Sigmar book comes out, a lot of those old dwarf kits go back to, you know, back to the old world, and we get some new dwarf stuff for the Cities of Sigmar. Now, we don't see any of that in this kind of announcement, but certainly all the Bone Splitters are gone. Also, interestingly, all of the various kind of war bands from Warcry for the Slaves of Darkness, apart from the Chaos Legionnaires and the Dark Oath Savages. All of the other ones are getting discontinued, both for Age of Sigmar and for Warcry, which is interesting. In addition, Khadgar's Ravagers are getting discontinued. Now, that's not too unusual. We see this quite a lot for the Underworld kind of warbands getting phased out. They're more, I guess, temporary for Underworlds, aren't they? Yeah. The Underworlds does operate more, I guess, circular, like Magic the Gathering with different editions and waves and cards and stuff. But it certainly surprised me because these are all great kits to see all of those disappear from the range. Mm. The other big one is the entire Beasts of Chaos range is going. Beasts of Chaos will not be an army in the ongoing future of Age of Sigmar. Again, they are all that whole range is moving to the old world. Wasn't a surprise with Beasts of Chaos being, you know, one of the main factions for old world. And again, we'll talk about this in more detail in the next segment, but there's been some things that we've talked about in the past, like Kragnos, for example. I'd have put money on that being a Beast of Chaos character, monster, whatever. And yeah, a decision's been made. Actually, no, we're not going to do beasts anymore. So we're going to shoehorn him into the destruction faction.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then finally, there's a few, basically the last few remaining resin models. So the Branch Wraith for the Sylvaneth, the Eternity Warden for the Seraphon, Valkyr the Bloody, Scarlet Angfragrim, Madcap Shaman, Big Boss and Gigantic Spider. They are all getting discontinued, going off sale. They'll be getting Legends War Scrolls. And finally, Jay, I hate to be the one that dashes your dreams,
but the Mistweaver.
The Mistweaver is also disappearing. Now, again, we've talked about Shadow, and there's definitely been lore about Shadow Elves. And over the last, like, 6 months, maybe, I do wonder if they've moved away from that aesthetic and they're going to do a Cities of Sigmar on the Dark Elves. It makes sense to have a Dark Elf analog in Age of Sigmar, and maybe where they've been playing with Shadow Elves and stuff, they're going to go more clean cut in the same way that Lumina the High Elves do something similar with the Dark Elves, which would be a shame, I think, Jay, because you quite liked the aesthetic of these, didn't you?
I loved them, yeah. I thought they were really cool, and I'm still hoping that there's like a, you know, the illusion sort of shadow demon type theme for the Malarians elves, but we'll see. You know, you've got Slaanesh and we've got Daughters of Cain. I think they do a good job of representing the sort of other aspects of the traditional Dark Elf. Mm. I would like to see Malarians elves lean into the sort of almost a Harlequin style force, you know, sort of play style.
Yeah.
Misdirection, that kind of thing.
Hopefully this model disappearing into the West is a sign that that's not going to happen. But again, we won't know. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. They have said on Warhammer Community that when the new edition comes out, there will be full free battle tomes for all these armies that are disappearing. So the Beasts of Chaos and the Bone Splitters, and that there will be legal war scrolls for every one of these miniatures that's getting discontinued. However, they have put a date on it. Summer 2025, all of these models will no longer be supported for tournaments. You'll still have Legends war scrolls. Obviously, you can, you know, use at home or in friendly events, but you'll no longer be able to use those in, you know, tournaments, officially sanctioned tournaments. And I think a lot of people have been very upset by that. It is a year's notice, which is good. But there's been some grumbles on the internet, some unhappy people, and, you know, rightly so. So I think, should we jump ahead into the next section and talk about this in a bit more detail, guys, as we talk about kind of models becoming obsolete in Games Workshop products? So, yeah, as mentioned, I guess obsolescence in miniatures, which is a weird thing to talk about. And I don't think we've ever really talked about it on the show before. And this has completely derailed our top three and the original plans that we had for this week's episode. But you know what? I think it's an interesting topic and should get the mental juices flowing as we chat about this. Mm. So I guess, where do we start? I guess one of the things that has got quicker in Games Workshop, certainly over the last few years, is the addition cycle. Now, back when we started the game, you were probably talking, I don't know, 5 or 6 years between an addition. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember the exact, but yeah, it was a lot longer than it is now. Yeah, I remember playing third edition for ages. I'm going to Google it now while we're talking.
You're going to Google it now. I'm sure it's about 5 or 6 years, and it's kind of got shorter and shorter and shorter each time. I mean, you've reviewed a load of Underworld stuff recently, Dave. And one of the things I think we've put on every single review for the last couple of years is a 6-month cycle is a very short window, isn't it?
Yeah, I must sound like a broken record on my videos and my posts, but I think every time that I do one, I have to mention it. I just think it's too soon. I'd love to see the sales figures, because they must back up this new starter box, new season every 6 months. But yeah, to me, it's far, far too quick. I don't like it at all.
Six years between third and fourth.
6 years. Okay. So currently, the edition cycle is now 3 years. 3 years between the mainline games. So we're talking 40K and Age of Sigmar. You know, 3 years ago this summer, the last Age of Sigmar box was released. And I don't know about you guys, but that only feels 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it doesn't feel very long ago.
No, so I wonder if this is one of the contributing factors to this big kind of exodus of models, just because of the acceleration of the range. I mean, the quick, I guess, show of hands, do people like a quick edition cycle? But do people not like a quick edition cycle? I don't know what your guys' thoughts.
Not me. I prefer the longer drawn out editions myself. And I think you sort of see that, like, I've fallen out of love with AOS because I just feel like I can't keep up. But I think probably some of that's my own making. Because, you know, we could just play friendlies at home. You don't need to play the latest missions and scenarios and things. But that's just maybe I'm an oldie. I think that's maybe why I like Chorus Heresy so much.
Because that stays a bit more stationary.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. With that being so popular, I do wonder if, I mean, we're how many years into Chorus Heresy 2nd Edition now? We're at least two, aren't we? So next year would be the third year of that. Could we see another edition of that coming along, maybe?
I think we will. I'd put money on it. I think we definitely will. And I think the fact that it's been so popular will only accelerate those odds.
Yeah,
see,
I mean,
for me, I don't mind 3 years, simply because of the fact that, like Jay said, if you're not feeling it for whatever reason, whether it be rules or general's handbooks or, you know, points or whatever it is, the shorter it is, the quicker those issues potentially get changed. And one of the things that I'm sort of like, not learning, because everyone always knows it, but you don't have to, like Jay said, you don't have to play 4th edition Age of Sigmar if you really want to. You can play 3rd edition. I mean, it's not great that they're getting rid of some of the models, but like, I think we all understand why they're getting rid of those models. But at the same time, just because they're no longer supporting it in tournaments, it doesn't mean you can't use them. And realistically, if you're not using them in tournaments now, will you be using them in tournaments in a year's time when, you know, they're no longer supported at tournaments? Probably not. So yeah. For me, I don't mind the 3-year cycle.
I mean, that's something you touched on there as well, that a lot of people on the internet have acted as if from today, these models are illegal and Games Workshop will come around your house and arrest you if you use them. That's not the case. They're still legal in tournaments until next summer. Obviously, Legends has got a bit of a stigma. And I think Jay as well, that's something Horus Heresy's got going for it, where the Legends there is really just stuff that doesn't fit in the mainline books, but it's still fully supported.
Yeah,
and that stigma doesn't exist.
I mean it is interesting, because I imagine most people who play Age of Sigmar don't go to events, so really that sort of restriction in these models being illegal is a strong word, but you know, prohibited in sort of events and tournaments probably doesn't apply to most people anyway. But it is interesting that that is the different, because like you say with the Horus Heresy, the Legends, there's no restriction there at all. So it is an interesting sort of distinction between the various systems. Yeah, interesting.
I think what hurts the most about the Stormcast is I do think there is an awful lot of Stormcast players that the majority of their army is the Sacrosanct Chamber. I think when Soul Wars came out, there was a lot of people that came over to Sigmar that maybe hadn't played it before, and it definitely feels like, cause I'm part of quite a few community groups and stuff on Facebook, and I've seen so many group shots of Sacrosanct models, and I'm trying to think of the last few Age of Sigmar tournaments I've gone to, there's normally one or two of those sort of kits dotted around army lists, although they are I guess more focused towards the newer looking Stormcast. I think that's what's hurt people the most. It's like most of their army is just gone. You know, if the Vanguard Hunters had been retired, I don't think there would have been, because they were at the edition before. I don't think many people really use those models. I could be wrong. There are probably loads of people going to write in and say I've got an entire kind of chamber of them. But I just think it's a lot of people had Sacrosanct armies, and that was the majority of their Stormcast collection.
But I suppose, going back to what Jay was saying, though, were people using those Sacrosanct armies at events? Probably not.
Probably not.
I don't think the most competitive units. I imagine there's a lot of nostalgia. You know, let's face it, the launch of Age of Sigmar was a little bit rocky, and I think second edition's when it started to find its feet, wasn't it? So a lot of people have fond memories of picking up that second edition box with all the Sacrosanct Chamber and the Night Haunt, and people have still got those armies now, where probably less so people have got the armies from the original Age of Sigmar box. I haven't got any of those anymore. They're long gone. They're ancient models now. It's like you say, it's unusual that there's some kits from before then that still exist, and all this is going. And I don't know, again, let's have a little free-form discussion on why do we think, not just the Stormcast, but all the other models in this list, why do we think those models in particular are going? For me, it's got to be down to sales. You know, they've got so many SKUs, haven't they? If they're only selling one box of Evocators every 2 months, so these are just figures pulled out of thin air, those boxes are taking space on the shelf that could be more exciting Stormcast kits that they're going to be able to sell.
But based on that though, Matt, do you think then that they sell more Vanguard Hunters than they do Evocators?
I assume so, because they're not on this list.
My thinking is, I think that's, it's almost certainly got to play a part in it, because it is a business at the end of the day. I wonder as well, though, especially because they're still providing rules for them, aren't they, is my understanding, like a Legends format, but they're no longer. Yeah, I wonder whether it's the tournament, the competitive play side of thing that also drives it, because obviously the bigger the roster, the more time the devs have to spend balancing and patching and balancing again. I mean, it's not just a one-off balancing exercise. It's a balancing exercise every time they bring out a new battle tome for any other faction, because they have to consider existing combinations for different armies and things like this with them. And that must just become quite an ever-increasing task whilst the range expands. And I think there is a very sort of competitive focus on Age of Sigmar, I think. I think that must be an element of it as well. And in addition to that, I think you have to make way for new stuff. So obviously the Stormcast, I mean, they get a lot of new models and a lot of new sort of sub-factions each edition. And maybe there's just not enough room creative window, maybe they want to do something different on the magic side. There's not enough room in the book for two magic type chambers. I don't know.
Well, I think, sorry to jump in, I think that leads quite nicely into my thoughts. I think they are going to redo the Sacrosanct Chamber with Thunderstrike armor. Or if they don't do that chamber exactly, if we don't get reimagined Evocators, we'll get something similar to what that chamber does. And I think that kind of ties into allowing you to use them for a year, because it could be next year that we see these reimagined Thunderstrike armor, Sacrosanct Chamber. So I think we'll see, units like these come back. Personally, I think that's part of the plan.
See, I some of them certainly, like, you know, we know Liberators, we know Prosecutors are going to come back. A lot of the Stormcast range is just a dude holding a different type of weapon, isn't it? Like, yeah. magic Stormcast, they could do something really out there. So imagine a Stormcast that soul's completely eroded and it's just a cracked and broken suit of armor with pieces floating around. Just the same thing mechanically as an Evocator, but it's something creatively different, like Jay was saying. It allows them to expand that range, add some exciting pieces. This was one of the problems with the initial launch of Age of Sigmar, that for the first 6 months it was like, here's a Stormcast with a hammer, here's a Stormcast with a sword.
Yeah.
And I think they can push the boundaries more creatively now with something that isn't necessarily just a gold suit of armor.
Mm. Plus, let's face it, when you look at Stormcast, same thing with Space Marines, you can only have so many units that do basically the exact same thing. Mm. Like, the Sequiturs are basically slightly different Liberators. They pretty much do the exact same thing. So realistically, if you're, you know, going out and buying these models, which one are you going to go for? You know, some people might go for the models that look nicer. Some people might, you know, base their decision off rules and points and, you know, what's good at events and tournaments, or what's just good in game at the minute and stuff like that. And I think with the Stormcast, especially, like, using Stormcast as an example, how many heroes do the Stormcast have, and how many do they actually need? Like, it's realistically, they've probably got 20-ish heroes, and they could probably get away with 8 or 9.
Do you think
realistically?
Do you think that was not poor planning? I don't mean poor planning so negatively, but do you think that the range? It hasn't been until recently that they've really sort of settled on a roadmap and a direction for Stormcast. Because you're right, at the beginning it was, here's this Stormcast, here's that Stormcast. And have they just taken a step back? Well, hang on, we need to actually sit down and plan this a bit better, because we're just getting a bit too overwhelmed with Stormcast options now, and refine that sort of product line a bit more. I don't know whether that was because of the sort of infancy of Age of Sigmar at the time, or the immaturity of it, and they weren't quite sure what they wanted to do with Age of Sigmar. And I think that was quite evident from the fact that we saw, you know, originally it came out was no points values, then all of a sudden there was points values, and then, like, say, Age of Sigmar 2 came along, and it was much more, you know, that's almost like the foundation for the game we know today. Yeah. Age of Sigmar First Edition was a bit, maybe they went a bit too crazy with it, and now they're having to say, right, now we need to take a step back and just refine that range a little bit more and give ourselves that creative sort of space to develop an army in a way we want to, like you say, much more interesting sort of magical type Stormcast, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you're right, because a lot of the factions, you know, like, look at the Cities of Sigmar, they've got the whole, like, new identity now, haven't they? And it'd be nice to see that for the Stormcast. You mentioned kind of hero bloat, Andy. Of the 25 kits that are going away, I think 14 of them are heroes.
Wow. That's an interesting
stat, isn't it?
Which is
a lot of heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked earlier in the show about some of the changes and how army building's changing, where you take a hero and then that hero then has, you know, detachments of warriors that go with them. You're going to see less heroes on the battlefield because of that, aren't you? You're talking 4 or 5 heroes and each of them having their little warbands, very similar to how Middle Earth works. And in that setup, I don't think there's space for 20 odd heroes doing all the same thing. You may as well consolidate those into a similar kind of, you know, war scroll with an awesome new models, and then ditch the old stuff. And I'm not saying that it's good that they're ditching all these necessarily, but I see the need to do it, especially in the Stormcast. Now, obviously, some of the other ranges have got models disappearing. We've talked about the Skaven. I think we'll all agree all those models are probably going to get replaced with new ones, and that makes sense, doesn't it? You get, especially the armies that are in the launch box, you get an awful lot of support, because you're getting half a box worth of kits, and then a couple of months later, you're probably going to get 8 to 12 brand new kits as well, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I noticed in the Skaven, they're not getting rid of the Night Runners.
They're not, which is interesting.
Those models are older than me.
They are. And the Plague Monks as well. I thought they'd be a goner as well. But, you know, again, They're quite good. Maybe they sell well and they're still hanging on to the range and they'll get replaced in the future. I don't think this is an exhaustive list of everything that's going to go with this edition either. I think there's going to be stuff here outside of the list that is gone in 3 years' time. Slaves of Darkness is the weird one for me. Horns of Hashut, Cypher Lord, Splintered Fang, Signs of the Fang,
really
all of those guys.
They're models as well. They're really, really good models.
You mentioned it earlier in the show. It kind of captures the idea of chaos isn't necessarily overtly chaos. These could just be cultists who are doing rituals and stuff, not knowing that they've got a chaotic patron above them.
The only thing I can think here, this really what sort of, I think, reinforces in my mind that competitive player has to have been a factor. Those units themselves are quite varied. They have quite almost like bespoke rules, don't they, within a battle tome, because they're a self-contained unit with various different profiles. They must be quite a pain to keep balanced and to review and to slot in alongside a new army mechanic in a battle tome, for example, because it's not just a unit of crossbow guys. It's one guy's got a crossbow, two guys have got an axe, one guy's got a shield, there's a pet in there, that guy can fly. How do they balance on? So
that was the perfect description of a Warcry.
That was amazing.
But that's the only thing I can think that a games dev looking at that unit in a new battle tome, the new Slaves to Darkness battle tome, was thinking, I've got no idea how to apply the army mechanic to this unit. I'm going to have to just exclude it. And then they exclude it, and then some clever guy will think, well, I can build an army now based around that with this. And that's the only, because the models are fantastic. So it can't be that the models are dated or anything like that.
It seems like such bad timing as well, because I quite like the new Dark Oath models. And if I did have Dark Oath army, there's a couple of these units that I would definitely feel works well with those.
I don't think any of these ones are very Dark Oath. They're keeping the Dark Oath Warcry Warband, because I think that's the identity that they want. Untamed Beasts, maybe, but all the other ones are definitely not Dark Oath looking, and they're keeping the Dark Oath ones, and I think that's the vibe they want. And it works nice on the battlefield. You've got your Chaos Warriors and your Chosen and stuff as your heavy armoured Chaos Force, and then you've got your Barbarian Tribes, which has always been a thing in Warhammer. With the Dark Oath range, that's now got an identity. Like, I can imagine the War Shrine getting discontinued when the next Slaves of Darkness book comes out, and a new Dark Oath thing that does the same thing come out. I think you hit the nail on the head there with like all the complexities, and that's if it's one unit. There's 10 Underworld, Warcry Warbands that are disappearing here. That, and you know what, you're probably right. For someone new to the game as well, these are all essentially just a unit of marauders, aren't they, for want of a better word.
They're kind of specialists, aren't they?
Yeah.
Specialist marauders, yeah.
We're going to have the new Dark Oath kit for your basic marauders, and then you've got your Ravagers for something a bit more specialist. That's probably as much as you need. You don't need another 10 on top of that, maybe.
Yeah, it's a shame. I look at the Slaves to Darkness kits, which, let's face it, we're not really Slaves to Darkness kits, but Warcry kits, really. Yeah. And in Warcry is obviously a much smaller game than Age of Sigmar or 40k, or it's never going to sell as well as those other games. And bringing on all those Warcry warbands into Age of Sigmar and then being like, here you go, here's them in a book. I know for a fact that the Splintered Fang, for example, they sold really well when I think it was the current Slaves to Darkness book came out in third edition, because they had the sixes to hit do mortal wounds thing, so they sold out straight away. And I can't help but think with these kits especially, they haven't sold that well in general, because the rules for Age of Sigmar are just awful, to be quite honest with you. You look at a lot of them and it's like one attack, hits on four, wounds on a four, no rend, one damage, and it's just, it's not very appealing. And these kits especially were, they're done for Warcry, but they're all, with the exception of the Horns of Hashut, they're all first edition Warcry teams. And now with Warcry especially, we're getting these boxes with double teams in them. We're getting tons of Warcry releases now, because the game, I can only assume, has really picked up. But all the new Warcry warbands, for the most part, aren't Chaos. They're all different Grand Alliances.
So I mentioned that in the Pyron Flood review, that Jay, you've never really got into Warcry because there's not been a faction that you've been into. But now with the Lumineth, you'd probably give Warcry a go.
Oh, I've built all these loot. I mean, yeah, they're really. I do want to use them in Warcry. They were such a cool unit to build, and you know, they've got that. This the bit that was missing from me for Warcry for using the old units from old Battletomes was that you didn't get a sort of almost like a warband feel to them. You know, they're all equipped the same, they all look the same. But with the River Temple, every model looks completely different. They've got different war gear options. Really, really cool. Yeah, so no, I agree with you there, Matt. Definitely.
Yeah, but I think you've hit it there, Andy. These are not Age of Sigmar units. They're Warcry units that have got a War Scroll to use in Age of Sigmar, and I do wonder if the newer stuff has got. I don't know. They seem to have a niche in the army in mind where these were just like, here's 10 different Chaos Cultist units. Yeah. I mean, the resin kits that are going, I think we can all agree that's probably a good thing. I can see Valkyr getting a new plastic kit. The Branch Wraith. Does anyone use a Branch Wraith anymore? You're just better taking the other Sylvaneth units, aren't you? Eternity Warden was pretty good, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. I think, well, he'll definitely get a new plastic model at some point, won't he?
Yeah. I think there's not much resin left in the range, is there? And I think Games Workshop's kind of master plan is everything plastic, which, you know, we're well on the way to now, aren't we?
Mm.
Mr. Weaver says a weird one, but we talked about that earlier. I don't know what that is about. It could be that if we do get that kind of Shadow Elf thing, she comes back then and we get something similar.
Maybe it's just this is Shadow Elves all over, just misdirection. She's not going anywhere.
This is it. Now, I know
you'll go on next week and it'll still be there to order. You're like, what?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I guess the biggies that people are disappointed about, the Bone Splitters, I mean, yeah, there were some dedicated fans, but I think the writing was on the wall for them, really. Ever since the Crawl Boys came in, I think that's the aesthetic for Orky Orcs in, you know, Age of Sigmar. The Bone Splitter models are really, really old, and it's not as if the models are going, you'll still be able to buy them. They're just going to be old world. Worst case, you could probably proxy some stuff here after the year's up. The big one, I think, is Beasts of Chaos. It's rare that we see it. I was about to use the phrase squatted, but that sums it up perfectly, doesn't it? The squats, A, didn't sell too well, and B, the designers didn't think they fit the vision of 40k very well. So when the third edition came round, they removed the range and they were, you know, consigned to the annals of history. Hence the term squatted that we get. And I don't think we've had, over the years, many armies squatted, have we?
No. Really.
And I guess this is the first, I mean, yeah, the Tomb Kings and the Bretonians to Age of Sigmar. The Beasts of Chaos have got a similar problem where they're holdovers of Warhammer Fantasy. And now that the old world's out, all those old kits, I feel, are going to go back there. Now, there's been some chatter online that we know it firsthand from chats we've had about demons in Horus Heresy, that obviously the Specialist Games studio and the main studio are two different kind of areas of the same business, and they both need to be able to justify releases with sales. If, for example, somebody starts a Beast of Chaos army, and they're buying kits from the Age of Sigmar range, the Specialist Game Studio doesn't see the revenue for that. You know, there's no distinction whether somebody buys a kit to use in the AOS army or buys the kit for their Old World army. The only way they can really do that is by having those kits sit in one bubble or the other, not across two of them. Mm-hmm. And we've seen an awful lot of that over the last 12 months in Age of Sigmar, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Where all those kind of old world kits are slowly getting phased out. We're seeing it with the Skaven now. A lot of them are going. I suppose the question is, what do we think of Beasts of Chaos going from Age of Sigmar? I was very close to starting a Beasts of Chaos army and decided to hoard the boxes and keep them for Old World, which it looks like in hindsight paid off. But I can understand if you're an Age of Sigmar player and you've got a Beasts of Chaos army, you would be incredibly disappointed right now. Yes, they're valid for another year, but, you know, dead man walking really on the army, isn't it?
Yeah, this is.
Yeah, I think it's bad.
I mean, it's good that they're putting them into Old World. I think, you know, thumbs up in that sort of regard. But I kind of look at these, and this is what really annoyed me. This is what really triggered me. Beasts of Chaos they haven't done anything with them narratively since Age of Sigmar first began. Like they've been mentioned in the background as like the generic enemy, you know, you're walking through a forest and oh look, there's some beastmen, oh we'll fight some beastmen and carry on. But they've never been at the forefront of any of the stories, or you know, they don't have any special characters in Age of Sigmar. You know, they're just like Matt said, they're just a, you know, they've been pulled in from the old world, well, Warhammer fantasy, brought into Age of Sigmar, and they've not really done anything with them. And for me, I was annoyed at that decision because I really like the Beastmen, but keeping them in the old world, I think I would probably prefer to play them in old world than Age of Sigmar. But I think the big thing that this sort of brought up for me was, if they're going to get rid of Beasts of Chaos because they haven't, you know, potentially brought them into the narrative, they haven't brought them into fluff, then what are they going to do with ogres? You know, I love my ogres. And this is spider kind of like riders. That big... Yeah, spider riders. You know, even Sons of Behemoth, which I think are safe because they are an Age of Sigmar army, but they've not done anything narratively with Sons of Behemoth. We've not done anything narratively with ogres. And I look at Beasts of Chaos and I think the exact same. They've not done anything with them. They've not been that threat. They've not caused any, you know, pardon the pun, chaos. And so, you know, I'm just hoping that they do something narratively with them in the old world that kind of drums up that hype for people to go out and buy Beasts of Chaos models. And I can't help but think that it was kind of a wasted opportunity. And when I saw this article, I mean, I don't have a army. I don't have a Skaven army. I've played Bone Splitters in the past, but I haven't got any. I haven't got any Beasts of Chaos at the minute. I was quite fortunate in the sense that none of my armies have been retired, or none of the models that I currently own have, you know, are going to be legend or anything like those lines. But when I saw Beasts of Chaos and all the Stormcast, my initial thought was, well, if they're going to do it to these two factions to this scale, who's next?
Yeah, I mean, I guess looking at the supported armies for the old world is probably a good place to look. Ogres aren't a supported one. They're just a legends one, which means they're probably going to get support in Age of Sigmar. There was an article on Warcom last week or the week before where they showed pictures of all the Vanguard boxes, you know, they're going to get new Spearhead boxes. There was a couple of omissions. The Beasts of Chaos went on there and the Ogres went on there. Now, you know, the knee-jerk thing could be, oh my God, they're getting rid of Ogres. If they were, I think they'd be in this article. I think what's more likely is that we'll see a big Ogre revamp and all those core kits, the balls, the iron guts, the lead belchers, they get replaced with new kits. And then the old ogre kits go to the old world. You know, we've seen the awesome new Gorgon models, haven't we?
I think it's fair to say though that you could it could shake the confidence of a, you know, I mean, even the fact that, you know, you've seen the Beastmen go, but if you're sitting there on a Spider Rider army, who knows? You know, potentially they could go as well. Yeah. And that's what troubles me a bit about it. I can understand all the reasons for reducing a rage and removing models, but it does, like you say, I'm lucky I don't have any armies, but if I had a spider or an ogre army, like you say, behind me, I'd be thinking, well, potentially it's got a shelf life now, whereas previously it never did. So it is a change, really. You know, you people, I can't remember in living for myself, like you say, the squats was probably, but that was before my time. None of my other models have been invalidated prior to this, really, I don't think.
No, it is a worry. You know, people are justifiably worried with this, aren't they? I think there's been some knee-jerk reactions. That there's been some very kind of like justifiable, this is a concern. There's been some arguments that maybe Games Workshop haven't handled this too well as well, and maybe it would have been better having a developer interview video just explaining the reasons why.
Yeah, that could probably help, couldn't it? The reasons why, yeah, a bit of justification for it. Because people have spent a lot of time and money and effort building and painting these armies, so I think, you know, they probably deserve a bit more of an explanation, I think.
Yeah,
it would be nice to get an explanation, but I think, you know, credit to Games Workshop, but I think we've done it at the right time. they've done it before the edition and not after the edition. Whereas I think, was it 40k 10th edition? They took all the Horus Heresy units, like the Leviathan Dreadnought, and
that was after the edition. Those kits for 40k as well, which was a funny move.
So doing this article before the new edition of Age of Sigmar comes out, at least then you can be like, oh, well, Sequiturs aren't going to be a thing in a year's time. Okay, I won't buy them now. You know, I'm not going to do them. I'll buy some Vanquishers or whatever they're called, you know. So I credit to Games Workshop for doing it ahead of time. Again, like you say, as long as this is all the models that are going to get pulled out before the new edition and we don't get another article in, you know, 6 months' time saying, you know, more Stormcast models are going, or, you know, whatever. You know, credit to them for doing it this early, because they must be losing out some sales, but yeah, probably not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder, say the Cities of Sigmar book comes out, is that going to get prefaced with all these dwarf kits are going and all these elf kits are going? The elves and dwarves are both supported in the old world, so I think the clock's ticking on them. And you look at those old world kits compared to the new Cities of Sigmar range, and they don't really gel at all, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. But I mean, if you compare it to like 40k Space Marine, you can, you know, your Firstborn, you could still use them, and you could even still use them as Counts, as Primaris, that kind of thing. Maybe there's some scope for that here, so you can use your, well, I don't know what though, Beastmen Counts, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really do feel that Kregnos was meant to be a Beast of Chaos named character, and he'd probably have some Centaurs that come with him. And then at some point before him coming out, they've decided, actually, we're not continuing with this, which maybe suggests that this Beast of Chaos shift has been on the cards for a very long time.
Which, again, is that a great thing? Potentially, is that, I mean, obviously, Kragnos is a destruction character, and I think a unit of sort of beastie-looking men might fit quite well in a destruction army.
Let's call them.
Yeah, potentially there's a Battletome Beastie Boys coming for Age of Sigmar.
And that'd be cool. That's the identity of the Beasts of Chaos, but with a new Age of Sigmar twist, which, to be fair, all the AOS armies have been really good when you've been given the chance to go, you know, let go of what's been before and go crazy and create something new. A Beastie Boys faction led by Kragnas. That'd be really cool. You'd have all your Centaur stuff and your weird gribbly monsters. I'd be all over that.
Yeah. I think, as you've been saying about writing on the wall for like elves and dwarves, I think they've just not known what to do with the Beasts of Chaos as they were. They've only had one new model, really, in the more recent past. I do feel really sorry for all the Beasts of Chaos players. I really do. But yeah, I just don't think GW saw a place in the future in the Mortal Realms.
Yeah, and you know what? I think some of this is probably narrative decisions as well. You mentioned the Sacrosanct Chamber gone. That entire chamber's gone. And visually, that kind of counts for something on the battlefield, doesn't it? I don't like a mismatch of different stuff.
Not quite the entire chamber. We still have the Knight and Cantors. You can still take Lord Arcanum's. So there is still some magic elements, but the rest of it's gone.
Yeah, just like aesthetically on the battlefield. Like you say, we could get something that fills that role, but in a different look. I mean, it's going to be an interesting one. Do you guys now fear this for other games? Like, you know, 40K next edition comes along, and a lot of the old aspects Warriors they haven't updated for Eldar disappear and just get written out of the lore.
I don't think that'll happen with 40k. I don't.
I think it's a fair comment, and I think really, in the absence of any sort of explanation, because if Games Workshop came out and said the reason we've had to reduce is because we can't maintain this larger range for Stormcast because of these, you know, this cost or this balance impact, that kind of thing, that might, and then you can take that information and think, well, actually, that really doesn't apply to an Eldar army necessarily. But until that's the case, you don't know. I mean, I think it's a fair criticism of this sort of thing. And I think it's just interesting now because, like I say, I've been in the hobby for 20, 25 years, and I've never, ever thought to myself when I've built an army or built a project that I'm wasting, you know, this is got a finite lifespan. I'm only going to be able to enjoy this in an edition for so many years. Whereas now, I think that's a fair thing to think about, you know. And I mean, I think this is why I like the Horus Heresy, because the Horus Heresy, I don't feel as at risk, you know. I think that's a stable game. The models and armies I'm building and playing with now will be just as viable and usable in 10 years' time, potentially. But on the Age of Sigmar front, can you say that now? And I don't know whether you can or not.
So there was rumour a long time ago, and this might be bobbins, but when Age of Sigmar first came out, there was a rumour that Games Workshop were going to try a model of the Age of Sigmar lore being fluid, lots of things changing. I think it's safe to say we've seen that from a lore point, haven't we? Lots of stuff has changed in the Mortal Realms. But there was a rumour that named characters would move in and out of the range as they die, new guys come in, they get defeated. I quite like that concept, apart from the fact that your expensive centrepiece model that you bought and painted is now, you know, no longer usable. But, you know, who's to say that Nagash gets offed and comes back in another aspect of Nagash with a new model?
Well, he did it. He did, didn't he, at one point?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting you say that. That sort of fluid sort of rule development, I guess. I know other companies, so Corvus Belli, Infinity, they have almost like a rotation type thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a particular faction in there, an alien faction. So what are they called now? I can't remember what they're called. They're like, not the good guys, but they're not the bad guys. They're like another alien race that have come to warn humanity, but have they really come to warn them? I don't know. They had a really, really cool, unique play style. They've got a really, really cool, unique aesthetic. And they were sort of rotated out of the game and different sub-factions for the Infinity list are rotated in and out as sort of the edition progresses. I don't know. I'm not as close to Infinity, so I don't know whether the rules are still available and still supported in tournaments and that kind of thing. I'm not sure, but I definitely do recall reading where they would like rotate, you know, what are they called now? Like, there's a special sectorial army list in for the different, like almost like sub factions, basically. A sectorial will disappear and then it may come back in a year or two with a completely new range refresh, that kind of thing. So it's not unheard of.
The major difference there, obviously, is Infinity, you've probably got between 8 and 10 models, whereas a Beastman army, if you've got 2,000 points of Beastman, you've got a heck of, especially Beastman, you've got a heck of a lot more models.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. If you think, like, the next edition of Age of Sigmar is in, well, how long is the edition? 2 years?
3 years. Three years. So, in theory, summer 27, the next edition of Sigmar will be out.
And that's when your Vanguard could disappear, potentially, Dave, if you use your logic.
Mm.
Yeah, do you think almost they need to start putting like a shelf life on a, you know, or like a guarantee, you know, this range of models is going to be supported for 10 years and then I don't know, but would that restore a bit of confidence?
I can't see them doing that because then that kind of shoes them into keeping it. But I mean, looking at like the Horns of Hashu, I only painted them up like a month ago for my Warcry challenge and now, you know, they've been removed. Don't get me wrong, would I buy another box of them? No, I don't think I ever would. Like, I don't really need them because for Warcry, once you've got a warband painted, you don't really need any more from that. And I've got the rules for them now, you know, unless I throw those rules away, I've got them now. I can, you know, maybe in like 2 years' time, if I'm still playing Warcry, they might not be balanced against what's, you know, come out or whatever. But I can still play with them. Like, I can still use them. There's nothing to stop me using my Horns of Hashu for the next X amount of years. And even if, you know, they bring out a new Warcry edition that is completely different, what's to stop me from writing rules with, you know, you guys and being like, hey, do you mind if I use these models?
Well, I guess if your thing was tournaments, though, you couldn't necessarily do that.
Well, I guess that comes back to what you said at the very top of the show, Jay. A tiny, you know, proportion. A tiny proportion of players play tournaments.
And they must have considered that.
I think that tiny proportion is probably the most vocal slice of the community, though.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you look at other games completely, like, you know, like Magic the Gathering. They have a rotation you know, you buy a pack of a deck of, and then it, you know, that cycles out of the competitive play, doesn't it? I can't remember what the terms
are. I think it's three expansions, and after that, it's no longer usable in competitive play.
Yeah, and that Magic the Gathering is just as popular as it's ever been. But I wonder there as well if there's an element of if that's known up front. You know, you buy into Magic the Gathering with that understanding that this is a temporary cycle, whereas previously that was never the case with Warhammer. I mean, if you picked up the Soul Wars last week, you would have picked it up with no, you know, thought in your head that potentially in 5 or 6 years' time you're not going to be able to use it.
You could say the same about Battletomes and Codexes, can't you?
So well, you sort of know that they've got a finite lifespan, don't you? Because you know they're tied. I know that's my. I know my 9th edition Space Marine Codex was only going to last me till 10th edition.
Yeah, but you look at like the Leagues of Votann, and that was invalidated before it even came out.
Well, that's a different thing altogether, there, isn't it? That's we've talked about that as well. That's like the contents of the actual codex. You know, the points and stuff are invalidated, and is that like a justification for taking the points out of the codexes and providing?
And you know what? I think that was the biggest move to the point, because up until that point, essentially, you had to pay for points, didn't you? Either in a general's handbook or chapter approved, or in your codex. After the Votann, let's call it Votann debacle, because it was before day one, the points had changed. I'm sure it was around about the same time that they moved all the points bit out of any purchasable products. So that is entirely free on the website. I guess the next step to that is rules. And I don't think we'll ever get to the point where all the rules are free. But we've seen some of the chatter about AOS that every army is going to get their full kind of rules pack. Now, we had the same said for 40K. And it wasn't really the full rule pack, was it? It was one detachment and all the rules, and then those rules possibly change when the codex comes out. Yeah. I would like to see it be true for Age of Sigmar that they do get the full rules and all the profiles. I guess it's kind of...
How disciplined
twice,
are they?
Twice bitten on that, isn't it, after 40K?
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting topic anyway. We have had a whole host of chatter on Twitter and in the Discord as well. So I think, Dave, should we jump ahead and have a look at some of the community comments on this?
That's a great idea. We'll be right back. So after that lengthy discussion, Matt, you kindly put out a message on social media. I think it was like the day after the post went live. And it's safe to say there was a lot of comments. So we think it's only fair that we read out a selection of them now. We can't possibly read them all, unfortunately. So apologies if we don't read yours out. But we're going to read as many as we can. I want to start off with a couple of these. So Super Saiyan Sunwalker Midget, great name, friend who plays Beast of Chaos is depressed. He really loved his goats, and they've only just got a new book, plus hero, plus lore, even a new starter box before Stormcast Eternals got theirs. So it seemed like they were going to persist. There's no way he's going to keep playing Age of Sigmar now. Yeah, it does only seem like 5 minutes ago when they got a new Vanguard box and a new plastic hero and such. So that's a massive shame. Saint Spider, I got a Skaven Vanguard box for Christmas and the clan rats are being removed. Life's fun. Now, obviously, Saint Spider put that on 4 days ago at the time of recording. We have actually seen on Warhammer now what the new clan rats are going to look like. And I'm really happy because whilst they look better and they're more dynamic, they're more detailed, they're not a million miles away from the original clan rats. So I'm really happy that these new clan rats are, you know, I can still use my old ones and they're not going to look too dissimilar. So obviously he didn't know that at the time he's written that, but I'd absolutely still use those clan rats if you want to, because they're not a million miles away from these new ones.
On that point as well, just jumping as well, the Warhammer World Events team reached out as well just to clarify a few things on this as well. And old Skaven and Stormcast, where the models have been replaced, can definitely still be used at Warhammer World. Players don't need to buy the new sculpts if you've got new Liberators or Clan Rats, and that's something they've never enforced at Warhammer World. You know, if you want to rock up with a you know, the old metal Carnifex, you'll be able to use that. So don't models that are getting replaced with newer models, you absolutely don't need to buy the new ones. You can still continue using the old ones, and arguably even Liberators with safe. We haven't seen any with swords and shields. We've just seen the hammers, but I'm sure you'd be able to proxy them as, you know, whatever's on their war scroll.
Absolutely. Mav has put, the Stormcast range is massive to the point of impacting faction identity, which we actually spoke about quite a bit earlier on. I don't play Age of Sigmar, but I couldn't tell a lot of these chambers apart. Wyatt Taylor says, supposedly a handful of the Stormcast stuff is getting new models in the new edition. My guess is the old stuff from Age of Sigmar first edition and some of the second edition stuff. Yeah, we're already aware that some of those are being replaced, like Liberators and the Prosecutors. They are both in the new trailer. Andy, have you got any that you want to read out?
Yeah, so again, on Twitter, I'm joining Matt's camp.
It's X Battle now, guys.
Battle Sister Alicia says, the models I don't mind leaving so much with the Stormcast, but I do hope some of the units get new Thunderstrike models. Well, I mean, like we've said, they've already confirmed that, haven't they? A lot of the generic Stormcasty stuff from first edition, like the Liberators and Judicators and stuff like that, we've seen new Liberators, so I imagine most of that new stuff is just going to get updated into Thunderstrike. Same with the Skaven. Then Raggedy Cat Ratty Man, love that name, literally just got a BNIB Dominion box, brand new in box, Dominion box in the post this morning to start a Stormcast army. Was going to drop some cash on extra units, but some of the ones I was planning on buying are the ones leaving. So not sure what to do, or, you know, what I can add to the Dominion models now. I mean, that kind of sucks a little bit, that, you know, but the Dominion box set is obviously, that's the third edition one, isn't it? So that's all the new Thunderstrike stuff. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing that I think, for me personally, you know, it's easy for me to say because I'm not a Stormcast player. You can still use these models. You know, what's to stop you from using Secretors as Liberators with shields?
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like you say, they were almost like just a new take on Liberators, weren't they?
Yeah. And I think the thing with that as well, actually, you could look at that the other way. If you're new to Age of Sigmar and you're new to the Stormcast, you're kind of a bit overwhelmed by, like, what the heck do I buy? There's so much choice. When suddenly the range is going to be getting a lot smaller. So pros and cons to both sides.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. If you've got the Dominion box, wait a couple of months for the new launch box to come out. That stuff's probably going to be quite good. And it probably, I imagine it'll probably gel quite well with the Dominion stuff too, because it's got the same aesthetic style.
Yeah.
And last one, Remain. It's good. We need way more visibility on what's going to happen. They should do that for every faction. So yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I mentioned with them doing it before the edition. You know, they've given players, you know, what, over a year, because they've said, you know, they're not going to be valid at match play after the summer of 2025. You know, you've got 18 months before you can't use them at tournaments and match play events and stuff like that. But so they have given you enough time to sort of, I say enough time, they've given you time to, you know, still use your models and play around with lists and, you know, all this sort of stuff in the next, you know, year and a bit. But then, you know, if you're not using these models at tournaments now, or you're not planning on using them at tournaments in the next 8 months, does this really impact you? So yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'll come on a shout out as well. Adrian Hurst says he's torn. The range was very big for a beginner, but removing recent units like the Sacrosanct seems unfair. Like-for-like replacements, like Liberators, is fine, as old ones will still work and the army book doesn't blow. But they need to not add so many kits if they intend to trim down. I think that's probably been I think that's a fair comment about the stunt.
Yeah.
That's probably goes a long way towards the trim in that there was a lot of blow. You know, we're four editions, including this new one, of Stormcast being in every box and getting an early release. In first and second edition, they had quite a few battle tomes, if I remember rightly, as well, with new waves of stuff and new chambers. Mm. They even put out that jokey video, didn't they? Like, you know, Lord Sigmar, you can't solve all your problems by opening a new chamber.
I can't.
The Rising Ape, my return to the hobby after 20 plus years, was the Soul Wars box. To see these shiny feathers retired does not feel good, especially those Drac lines. Ape Jr. was just devastated to hear his beloved Ballista was going to. He loved using that against my Nighthawk. And you know what? We've talked about, I guess, people in our situation. There might be kids in the hobby that have only got that Soul Wars box, and that is their entire Stormcast army. But arguably, they can still play with it with the Legends rules, can't they?
Yeah,
I was just about to say it. You know, you're looking at it for like new players getting into the hobby and stuff like that. They just want to build models, put them on the table and roll some dice. They're probably not going to tournaments. They're not going to events. They're not bothered about what is legal, you know? Yeah. So I get it. But at the same time, it's a bit, I think looking at this realistically, are we sad that some of these models are leaving? Yes. Did we plan on buying, building and painting these models? Probably not, no. So
I was an answer me the caters to my new Stormcast army, actually, Andy.
Generally. Well, you've got 18 months.
just on that, Matt, because I think this comment ties in quite nicely with the one that you just read out. Top Down Painting says, to say I'm less than happy is an understatement. I got into Age of Sigmar through the original Partworks magazine, and now my entire army will be obsolete. While I will still be able to use the models in the new edition, it still leaves a foul taste in my mouth. At least there are other game systems out there that are miniature agnostic, so I can still use them all when I want to. Kind of the same as like people who bought the Soul Wars box, but maybe even more on a bigger scale, because that original Partwork series was primarily Sacrosanct, so you did get quite a large army of that chamber.
Yeah, you did. It was a lot of the stuff that was released for second edition, which unfortunately is getting removed. Though there were a lot of kits in that run that aren't getting discontinued as well. The Vanguard Chamber, I think they were in the magazine run, they're still valid. The Celestant Prime, surprisingly, is still in the range. I thought that'd be one that'd go. So I get it does suck. And I know it's a bit of a kick in the teeth. Lee has made a comment kind of along those lines. It's making me rethink how I engage with GW. If this is the future of their games, the value of their minis just went down for me. Some are only a couple of editions old. I've continued buying GW minis as I could always use them. That no longer seems to be the case. So, yeah, it is true. I want to just give a shout out to Jem as well. Jem sent me a message because it wouldn't fit in a single tweet. I think it's really, really kind of interesting take. So from a commercial perspective, I'm sure they've chosen a whole group of models that just aren't selling very well. In the case of the Skaven, they're genuinely very old, and I'm clearly about to get a refresh. Some of them are so unloved that they're still on the website with square bases. Games Workshop is a company that has to worry about its share price and its annual revenues, but it's not selling widgets, it's selling a hobby. None of this is essential. We in the hobby do not have any rights over the company, but if the company wants to keep us to keep buying, they can't take people for granted. I've been on quite the journey in the last year with them, getting frustrated with lots of out-of-stock models, scalpers taking over pre-orders, and as somebody who rarely plays, why am I trying to keep up with new releases? I'm increasingly buying 3D prints of interesting models online that could either be used as proxies, but more importantly, are either pre-built or very easy to build and cost less. I've noticed I'm spending less time in the hobby and spending less money on the hobby, and this is because GW is making it harder to hobby. And I think he's got some valid points there. You know, certainly there's been difficulties with pre-orders, and I tried to get the final Siege of Terror book, and it was the first big release after the new website, and it was a shambles. It really was. I know a lot of the Legions Imperialis stuff has been very, very hard to get hold of. The book, for example, so obviously we do a lot of reviews and stuff. I didn't manage to get a hard copy of that book until I stumbled across the last one in Warhammer World by chance, because somebody probably returned when it was back on the shelves. I do think this, with a lot of the other things that have happened recently, probably has left a bad taste in a few people's mouths.
Yeah. Now, I'm hoping that, you know, Games Workshop will take... This will be a learning experience for them, I think. And the feedback that they'll have, because they'll absolutely be reading this feedback, they'll see it, and it may sway their decisions in the future. I mean, I'm still a strong believer that they wanted to do this with the first Bourne Marines. I've just got it ingrained in my head, but they didn't want to take that risk with Warhammer 40k, but they were willing to take the risk with Age of Sigmar. It'll be interesting to see if they do anything like this again. Of course, models will come in and out, you know, on this scale.
Yeah.
And with these, you know, models that have only sort of addition or two ago, or in the case of that Beast of Chaos new Lord model within a year of release.
Yeah. And I'd say if anyone does have any more comments on that as well, let us know. We'd love to know everyone's thoughts. It might be something that we revisit, you know, maybe 6 months into Age of Sigmar 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I'm absolutely in mourning over my evocators. I genuinely was, antiquators, to be honest. I was tempted to pick up a box of each of them very soon to add to my new Stormcast army, because I love them so much in my old Stormcast army, but yeah, probably less inclined to do that. Although I do know I can use them in Legends rules and stuff. So, there is that, but, quite disappointed. Oh, thanks again, everybody, for sending your comments our way. They were a really interesting read to see everybody's point of views. I do hope Sigmar comes out of this, you know, into the new edition. Hopefully, you know, we'll have a fantastic time with this new rule set and things and the new box. I'm really sorry for the Beasts of Chaos and Bonesplitters armies out there. But thanks, everybody, for sending your comments in. Next podcast, we will have the top three that was supposed to be this week, which was your top three dream models you'd love to see appear on Made to Order. You could really whack you with this across any of the systems. You can get those into us now, or I myself or Matt will put a tweet and message out on Facebook when we are actively collecting them ready for the podcast recording. Yeah, I've really enjoyed sort of the discussions we've had on this week's episode. It's been a serious look at Warhammer and the workings of Games Workshop, and it's been really enjoyable. Hopefully, we'll have more cat talk and funnier stuff on the next episodes. We definitely need you along, Andy.
Let us know if you prefer serious chats about, you know, the commercial workings of Games Workshop, or talking about Andy's cats. You know, we'll do whichever you guys like.
Yeah, absolutely.
We could do a guest spot with my cats coming on.
And on that bombshell, we shall end this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Do get in touch with us if you have any feedback, and we'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Until then, happy hobbying. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. For more content, remember to check out spruesandbrews.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, send us a tweet at spruesandbrews, or head over to facebook.com/spruesandbrews.
I like that you left a gap for Jay as well.
I really like Beastmen, and I'm sad because they're gone.
They're not gone in our hearts, though, Andy.
They've been herded away.
Oh, that was quite good. I like that, dude.